G'day everyone, welcome to another Toon Under podcast, the Southern Hemisphere's biggest and best podcast, all things Newcastle United. Welcome to the United series, episode two, and tonight's guest, well, he's a very special guest. We've got plenty to talk about with him, the upcoming tour, any summer business, the boring old profit and sustainability stuff, which is financial fair play for those who haven't caught up with the new lingo for it yet. Sponsorships, and we might cover off a little bit of bits and pieces as we go along. But without further ado, tonight's guest, you can hear him on Pod on the Tyne with George Corkin and Taylor Payne. You can read his work at The Athletic. It's a welcome back, and that means you're officially a friend of the pod, Mr. Chris Woff. Chris, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Yes, not too bad. How are you guys doing?
We're good. We're on the countdown, so it's just a little over a month to go until, instead of us getting up in the middle of the night to watch Newcastle play, they're actually coming to us. So without further ado, we'll get stuck into that, because that's been the hot topic, especially down here for the last probably 3 or 4 weeks since it was announced, or it was rumored to be announced, and then it obviously was announced and stuff like that. How was the news received over there?
I think there was a bit of puzzlement really at this end, if I'm perfectly honest with you, because of, if you take the context of Newcastle United season, and I mean, my colleague George and I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago, and really this season for Newcastle, if Nottingham Forest and Everton are going to have asterisks next to their name because of points deductions for PSR regulations, then Newcastle should maybe have an asterisk next to their name, because this is the season of injuries, really. And it has been an exhausting and exhaustive campaign for Newcastle. They've had a significant number of ailments, which have been exacerbated by obviously Champions League football and the squad not being able to cope with that. And then they've had a lot of freak injuries. And then eventually it's become sort of self-perpetuating almost. And because they've had so many players out, other players have had to play a greater number of minutes. And then that has led to further injuries. So to add on two games immediately at the end of the season, which Newcastle are going to, the schedule, my understanding is the schedule is that Newcastle are going to fly immediately after they play Brentford on the Sunday of the final day of the season, fly across to Melbourne. They're going to arrive, then they play on the Wednesday, and then they play around 48 hours later on, and then they're basically going to fly
on the Friday.
Yeah, on the Friday. So then they are going to fly, some players are going to be flying immediately, I imagine, continuing around the world to potentially be part of the Copa America. Others are going to come back and go to the Euros. You have obviously players who may miss out on part of camps with their national sides or they like to go to it. So that I realise I'm starting with a negative point there, which I understand is entirely exciting for you guys, but I'm just trying to be honest about the initial reaction here was one of surprise and like, why are Newcastle doing this? And the obvious reason for, well, there's two obvious reasons for that. One is to both reach out to their already global fan base, but then try to expand further. And other clubs have done a lot of these postseason tours over a longer period of time to try and reach out to other areas. Because I know that you guys get up in the middle of the night and love watching Premier League football and other games, but to actually see it in real life, regardless of whether it's a friendly or an exhibition match, I imagine is a different experience. And that can really capture fans, it can reach out to others. And so there's that first reason. And then the second reason, the other reason, which has been the other big question mark around Newcastle United over the course of the last year, is PSR, the Premier League's profitability and sustainability regulations. And basically, for Newcastle to be able to spend more going forward, they need to gain more revenue. And so there is going to be a financial benefit. I don't think it's absolutely massive, but equally there will be a financial benefit for Newcastle going to take part in these two exhibition matches, the first of which is against Ange Postecoglou's Spurs. Now, I think it wasn't Newcastle were the only team who were potentially going to be involved in that. I think it would have depended on who got through the FA Cup quarter-final weekend. And Newcastle ended up getting knocked out by Man City. And so then they became the side who will play against Ange Postecoglou's Spurs out there. So yes, that's the initial reaction, I'll admit, was one of surprise. And even Eddie Howe has come out and said, in an ideal world, if you offered him two extra matches on the end of this season, from a physical perspective, would that be what he wants as Newcastle United head coach? No, it wouldn't be. But there's obviously far great other factors within this which complicate matters and which mean that Newcastle have made the decision to go out there, and Eddie Howe publicly at least has backed that.
Yeah, and I thought the first thing I thought of was, like, these guys would have booked their holidays for that week. Like, we finish on the Sunday, all right, the guys who aren't involved in the Copa America or the Euros or anything like that and who are going on holidays. Let's go somewhere warm. Let's get away. And then have all that kind of thrown up in the air. Like, I know they're on a lot of money and they can probably afford to rebook flights and things like that. But just the whole, I guess, annoyance of it all. I thought oh, that it wouldn't fly. Like, there would be some players who'd probably love to come to Australia and they've heard lots of good things about Australia and would love to see it and stuff like that. But I still think there would be that small minority who would be a little bit, I wouldn't say angered, but maybe upset about having to travel to the other side of the world when they thought they were going to be in some other exotic location.
I think when they were first told, I think there was some frustration, at least with some members of the squad, and because of that, and it's to a lot of them, it's probably not ideal preparations for what may be one of the biggest international tournaments they may ever play in if they get selected for their respective nations, or as you say, those who wanted to go on holiday with their families at the end of a season. And it, beyond the sort of mental toll, I suppose, is also that physical challenge. Beyond the physical challenge, is also the mental challenge of you going immediately at the end of the season when a lot of the players who aren't going to be involved in international tournaments this summer would want that switch off. And instead, you're going to be doing a heck of a lot of travelling before playing these two matches. So, yes, it is a strange thing for, I think, Newcastle fans in the UK and certainly the players and the management to get their heads around. But I'll be honest, I don't think this is going to be the last time that Newcastle are going to go on a post-season tour. I think that going forward, given the need to further expand the global fan base, and given the need to meet with PSR regulations going forward, even though PSR is being changed and sort of reformed going forward, it still is about revenue, and about the more revenue you get, the more money in theory you can spend. And so Newcastle will look to maximise all of these commercial opportunities wherever they can.
Yeah. So how much do you think that it actually, like a tour like this, is there a dollar, like there's obviously a dollar amount that they're getting to appear here as well, but do you have any idea how much that might be in terms of not just an appearance fee, but can you put a fee on growing the team and what that looks like, especially coming through next season when the club take back control of the club shop and all these little things that are back in the club's hands? Do you think like it would help that much?
I don't think this is drastically going to change Newcastle's PSR situation. I mean, I don't have exact figures, but from conversations I've had, Newcastle are getting a certain appearance fee, but then you've also got to take into account the money they are spending to go out there and the like. So in terms of as an actual sort of net gain, what they're going to get from it, it's certainly not in the multi-million pounds for pounds. I mean, I don't know what that sort of reverts to in terms of currency when you go to Australian dollars, but it does make some difference. And I think more than that, it is about potential growth going forward as well. As if you do this now, going forward, we've done it this one time, if we've expanded our fan base for now, then the gains will be longer term because you'll be able to demand higher fees, whether that's you go back to Australia or somewhere else in the future, because you've seen how much of a pull you can be. So I think it's part of a longer term strategy, although there will be some, albeit a smallish, net benefit PSR-wise. But really, Newcastle need every PSR benefit they can get at the moment because they are very, very close to the limits. And going into the June 30th deadline, they, along with just about every single other club in the Premier League, are trying to work out how exactly they make sure they meet that figure.
So have you heard anything from the club, either directly or indirectly, of what, like, us fans in Australia can maybe look forward to the week that they're here?
They're still, as far as I'm aware, still finalising some of the plans, but I do think there are going to be sort of outreach. It's not going to be the exact same as when Newcastle went on pre-season to the US last year, because that was part of the Premier League summer series. And so there was a lot of formalised events through the Premier League, and then Newcastle also did events of their own accord. My understanding is there are going to be at least some events like that when Newcastle go out to Australia. They do want to make it just beyond the game. They want to make it a sort of that Newcastle are in town. But there will also be the issue of the short amount of time that they're there, so they have to take into account jet lag, and then obviously can they actually get out and train for a little bit, so that they have very limited time in Australia when they're actually physically going to be in the country, because they're basically only going to be there for 3 or 4 days. But I do think they are going to try and reach out to supporters where they can.
Yeah, right. That's going to be good. I've taken the week off work, so the more the better as far as I'm concerned. Now, I guess the big question is, did you or George get a ticket to come out and travel with the team and report on it or not?
We've proposed it, but we haven't yet heard back from our paymasters at the Athletic. So I assume the answer is going to be no, but I would very much like that would be a good jaunt, if a tiring yeah. one, but one I definitely I'll put my hand up for that one.
Yes, absolutely. Dimmy, have you got anything?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say, obviously, for us, it's huge as Australian Newcastle United fans. We don't get to see the team in the flesh at all, really, let alone very often. So any game that we get to see live is a huge thing. Obviously, there is that thing in the back of my mind. The last thing, and I don't want to wish it upon anybody, but the last thing we want to see is a long-term injury or something happen to one of our key players. God forbid something happens. So obviously for us selfishly, yes, it's great to see the club and to hopefully get involved with the club and sort of connect that way. But geez, we hope there's no injuries, because I don't think Newcastle will be coming back to Australia anytime soon. if there's a long-term injury or if there's some sort of problem that comes from this tour.
Well, in terms of the Spurs game, I mean, obviously there's a massive draw from Ange Postecoglou, but in terms of like relative Newcastle exposure there, what sort of exposure, what sort of likelihood do you think that people will turn out in terms of to see Newcastle United specifically there?
So specifically Newcastle do have a fair fan base in Australia. I mean, there's supporter groups all across Australia who go to various pubs and watch the game. There's a supporter group called Aussie Mags who sort of coordinate all of that. And Newcastle, we do get decent numbers to pubs to watch games. I think, honestly speaking, Tottenham is going to be the draw. Tottenham probably have, especially with Ange, have the name. And I'm not sure if Son's going to come or some of their players going to come. That Son's got a massive name here in Australia. He's obviously been here before with Korea at the Asian Cup back in 2015 when Australia won the Asian Cup. So their players probably have a bigger pull to the average football fan, but Newcastle do have a growing name, and there is plenty of us who have been following the club for a very long time, and we've seen a lot of rubbish, and this is sort of now our time to enjoy. And I'm sure that, especially that Spurs game, there's probably going to be, I would say, at least 55, 60,000, probably even more, go to that game. And I think there's going to be a fair few Newcastle fans there, or I hope so. And it's just for us to see the club live and to congregate live and watch a game is going to be amazing. And I think people in the UK will be surprised how passionate and how many Newcastle fans there are down here. And hopefully we can do the support base and the club proud. And hopefully, yeah, hopefully it's not the first time and only the last time that the club comes down.
Well, my understanding on the situation is that the Newcastle are meant to be taking a strong squad. That has been the message internally. So I think that you should see some, if not all, of the sort of star names, certainly the ones who are fit. Now, I'd say, Keegan, behind you, you've got an Isak shirt. Just a question to each of the two of you. Who are you most looking forward to seeing if, hopefully, they do make the trip out there?
You get these. honestly, it wouldn't bother me. Like, it's not a... It's not a player per se.
Badge.
Yeah, I wouldn't care if I didn't see any players and I seen Eddie Howe and Jason Tindall. Like that even that would be enough for me. You know what I mean? Like it's not
Tindall
a player.
Tindall top of his town further.
Yeah. It's more and like what Dimmy said, like with Aussie Mags and what they do, like I'm not sure, especially over in the UK, I'm not sure many people understand how big our country is. Like you can fly for 6 hours and still be in Australia. Like it's ridiculous. It's nearly the size of Europe in terms of like flying and everything like that. And they kind of do coordinate meetups and stuff like that in each sort of major capital city. And then for the last couple of years, we've had a national meetup where everyone's sort of flown into the one city and watched the game, which has normally been maybe an early kickoff, which is, depending on daylight savings and things like that, it might be 9:30 or 11:30 at night on a Saturday night for us. But one of the things I'm looking forward to the most is what's great about the meetups is you get to talk with like-minded fans. And like we went in, we didn't know anyone, me and Dimmy, and we made like 50 friends straight away, or like there'd be 200 of us in a pub at 12 o'clock at night watching Newcastle play. Now we get to have that same experience. There'll be more people and we'll actually get to watch them live. Like it's a whole new different sphere. And I think that's what I'm looking forward to the most is just the occasion. And it might not seem like much for everyone else, but for us fans in Australia, and obviously me and Dimmy are lucky enough to be in Melbourne where it's actually going to be played, Like, I can't wait. Like I said, I've taken the week off work. Like, I'm just going to go up to Melbourne. Like, I'm about 45 minutes from Melbourne. I'll be up in Melbourne every day that week and just going to everything I can, and because you never know when it's going to happen again. And you just want to take up and absorb as much as you can while you get the chance, because you never know.
It's the badge that really, I mean, obviously you said, Chris, which players we want to see. It's really, we're Newcastle fans, obviously, first and foremost, and we've been following the club for long enough time that players come and go, and obviously you connect to players as well, but it's the club and the everything about the club that you connect with. So just seeing the black and white, I mean, hopefully we wear a home top, but hopefully we see a black and white stripes. I'm not sure who the home team is. I'm not sure how it's going to work, but even if it's not, it's still the badge. And that's really what we want to see. And like Hegan said, I think people in the UK are going to be pleasantly surprised about the passion and the support that we're going to get here. And I mean, I know Keegan's going to talk about it a bit later. The events and the sort of the pre-games leading up to the games are going to be quite big. And I think when those pictures go back to the UK and those videos, and sort of similar to what happened when Newcastle went to Milan and there was all those videos down the river there, I think there's going to be similar scenes here in Melbourne. And I think that's going to be, I think, eye-opening to hopefully the club and everyone in the UK, that obviously Newcastle is first and foremost from Newcastle. It's northeast of England, but there's a lot of people here on the other side of the world who are just as passionate. And this is, for us, exhibition game, but it's just the event for us is enormous.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll back up what Dimmy said. So Aussie Mags have been working feverishly trying to organise this stuff, and it happened late, so it has been really hard to coordinate and things like that. But if you go and check their socials, which is mainly on Facebook, they might do a little bit on Instagram, but if you check their Facebook, they've actually announced where supporters can meet and congregate and things like that for both the games. So for the Spurs game, which is at the MCG, if you sort of make your way down Swan Street, if you can't see them, you'll definitely hear the people singing and carry on. So just go to wherever the noisiest places are. But it would be the Precinct Hotel, the Richmond Club Hotel, and the Corner Hotel, which is in pretty close proximity to the MCG. So if you're looking for a beer for like-minded fans before the Spurs game, definitely find yourself to one of them establishments. And on the Friday night when they play the A-League All-Stars at Marvel Stadium, they've kind of coordinated down at South Wharf at the Boat Builders, Melbourne Public, Munich Brauhaus, and the General Assembly as well. So if you missed all that, jump on Aussie Mags' Facebook page, and they've got all the details there and stuff like that. And I'm no doubt closer to the event, there'll be more information with times and things like that as well. And while we're going, we had Ryan Scott on, Chris, who's the keeper for the Newcastle Jets over here in the A-League, and he is a boyhood Newcastle United fan. So we're encouraging everyone who can log on to the A-League website, and you can vote for Ryan as the A-League goalkeeper for the match against Newcastle. Oh, okay, so we're encouraging everyone to help Ryan live his boyhood dream and finally get.
He's actually going. He's actually got tickets to the game.
He's got tickets, but he'd rather be on the grass than in the seats. So if anyone, just jump on and give him a vote. We'd love to be able to watch him and kind of cheer for him at the same time. So, yeah, it's exciting times over here, and we can't wait for it all to kick off. But that's about – we'll wrap up the Australian talk now. Otherwise, we'll get too carried away, Dimmy. We'll burn ourselves out before we've even left England. So in terms of news, and we spoke about the PSR rules and things like that, the club do have a few options open left that they haven't explored with their revenue and things like that, with like a training kit sponsor and maybe a training ground sponsor, naming sponsor as well. Has there been any movement with that sort of stuff?
I mean, Newcastle are exploring all of those, sort of possibilities. Now, the training ground one, I think, is slightly longer term. Newcastle would want, if you're going to do that, then you want it to be a significant value of money. And I think the problem Newcastle have had, one of the things I've encountered during the time alongside, obviously, Premier League sort of changing some of related party rules, which has meant that Newcastle, whenever they've got a firm like their front of shirt sponsor seller who is linked to PIF or is PIF owned, Newcastle have to prove the relative market value, and essentially they have to show that other companies would be willing to pay a similar or equivalent amount for a similar sponsorship. Now, that's probably part of the reason why, as of yet, they haven't got a training ground sponsor, because you look at what Man City have done, or you look at what other clubs have done, and they've been able to maybe use some of those relationships with which they've got, whereas Newcastle, everything is being scrutinised. And the first sort of, I mean, we're 2.5 years essentially into the project, just over post-takeover, and Newcastle have been careful not to get themselves drawn into too many long-term deals too soon, because you could agree a long-term deal which is worth significantly more than your previous commercial deals. But if they get to where they want to get to in the not-too-distant future, then that may be an undervalued deal in 2 or 3 years' time, if you see what I mean, in terms of you basically making an intermittent step. And so Newcastle have been trying to either agree deals which are either just for now, short to medium-term, or ones where there is a break clause potentially, and then they can kick on going forward. And that's part of the reason why there have been delays over some of the commercial deals that they've been agreeing to. It's part of the reason why Seller took a little bit longer maybe than necessarily expected. And so that's a roundabout way of me answering the question to say, yeah, as of yet, they haven't agreed those deals. I do think that we will see a training kit sponsor in the short to medium term. I don't know exactly when, but I do know that negotiations have been ongoing for it. Newcastle haven't, as of yet, reached the exact value they want, because they don't want to commit to it before they get to a certain figure where they think, yeah, that's definitely worth it. Whereas if they commit to something and then in 2 years' time think, actually, we've tied into this deal and we've actually restricted ourselves. So all of these ideas are being explored. All these avenues are being explored. And the reality is that actually, commercially, Newcastle have made huge strides, absolutely massive strides. But really, realistically, compared to where they wanted to be, I think they maybe wanted one or two more deals confirmed by now. I do think we will hear of one or two more before the end of the season. That is what I'm hearing at the moment. And that is to get Newcastle up to those levels that they feel it should be on this journey to get to anywhere close to Man City sort of levels. I mean, they are still, despite the huge progress they've made, the comparison always gets made to back to 2007 when Mike Ashley took charge of Newcastle. They were basically level with Spurs when it came to commercial revenue. They still lag miles behind that, and Spurs are nowhere near what Man City have been able to generate with their sort of world record fees on that. So it's still going to take time, and it's still a work in progress, but you are going to hear of more and more of these deals going forward. I think Newcastle will have more and more of these bespoke partnerships, the cliched sort of Man United have a tractor sponsor somewhere in East Asia, that sort of thing. I think Newcastle might not go to the extent that Man United do, but I do think you'll see more and more of these partnerships going forward, because that's exactly what they need. As I keep saying, revenue has to grow for you to be able to spend more, and that's exactly what Newcastle want.
Yeah, don't ring the tea towel. Get every last drip you can out of it, because you never know. Every dollar counts. So I was thinking too, maybe with the Adidas release, that might tie in with maybe a training kit sponsorship and stuff like that, once that sort of training range gets released and things like that. Hopefully that's got something to do with it. We'll move on to the summer, Chris. Everyone was very worded up in November, December that it was going to be a quiet January, and most people had heard that before, and then it ended up being a lot of money spent. So people kind of took it with a grain of salt, and I don't think it sort of kicked into maybe the 25th, 26th of January, and everyone kind of went, oh, no, they weren't taking the piss here. They really aren't going to do anything. So with the Adidas money coming in now, and another year of the Seller sponsorship, the Champions League money, all that's going to be kind of factored in. Do you see much happening in the summer, and how does the injuries to Lascelles and Botman change what the club's plans might have been in terms of what positions they're looking to target?
Yeah, it's funny when you talk about the January window, because, I mean, we as journalists have to a degree been left with egg on our face in previous windows when we talked about, I mean, from before the takeover happened, when it was still in the period when it was potentially going to go through, having so many conversations with so many people in and around the takeover, where they were saying, this is a business project. We will spend money, but equally, it's not just about we're not just going to throw endless money at it. We can't throw endless money at it. And then obviously the furore around it, and it became Newcastle, the quote unquote wealthiest club in the world. And then they go through that first January window where they had to spend and did spend. And then the following summer, they weren't going to spend all the money that they were going to until Callum Wilson gets injured, and then Newcastle go and send a club record fee of £60 million on Alexander Isak. And it's just going every single window, basically, since then, Newcastle have probably spent more than was necessarily expected. But at some point, that was going to catch up with them. PSR-wise, it had to. And January was sort of, and I think that there was multiple factors in this, partly that the Everton points deduction where it was sort of a perfect storm of, right, this window, we can't, unless we sell someone, we can't spend because we are really, really at the limit here. So that was January. Now, in the summer, that will ease to a degree for all the reasons that you mentioned. It is the way that the Premier League current PSR rules work is it's a three-year ruling figure that you have to be within. You're not allowed to lose more than £105 million, notwithstanding that you can discount certain things like academy costs and for women's football and infrastructure costs. And so Newcastle are going to knock off a previous season and then it's going to come onto this one. So that, therefore, Newcastle will gain in terms of revenue that's coming in. And so there is money to spend anyway. And the way that this is all complicated and boring, but the way it works with transfer fees is it's amortized over the length of a contract up to a maximum now of 5 years. So if Newcastle signs someone for £40 million this summer, in accounting costs, that will be £8 million for next year. And then it'll be £8 million for each of the next 4 years of the contract as well. So Newcastle do have wiggle room when it comes to going into the summer. But before that, there is this June 30th deadline, which is the current end of the Premier League's this financial year for the Premier League. So Newcastle have to be compliant with the Premier League's rule for that. More complicated than that is that UEFA's financial regulations don't actually work. There it goes from January the 1st to December the 31st for a lot of their calculations. Calendar, so Newcastle have a different calculation to work out there. And with the way that it's working with UEFA, for the season Newcastle have just been in, they have to 90% of their revenue can be spent on a combination of amortized transfer fees, wages, general costs. And that's going to be tapered down to 70% eventually. And the Premier League's regulations are probably going to, the changed ones are going to taper down to 85%. But if Newcastle are in European football, as they want to be, it'll have to be 70% anyway.
Yeah.
So I realise, sorry, this is a lot of information, but I'm just trying to outline the sort of situation that Newcastle are in to try and explain the position they're in. Beyond that, though, Newcastle, for all the business Newcastle want and intend to do, there will have to be exits this summer. Now, obviously, the big ones are, will Alexander Isak go? Because there's going to be a heck of a lot of interest, even though he's going to cost a heck of a lot of money, just because he's now proven Premier League and probably the most informed striker in the Premier League at this moment in time. Bruno Guimaraes, obviously, has a £100 million release clause in his contract. Again, another player who a lot of other clubs are looking at and thinking, he's proven in the Premier League, could we go out and potentially sign him? Now, Newcastle, certainly with Isak, there's absolutely no intention of losing him. The desire is to keep Bruno Guimaraes as well, but if someone meets his release clause, he may have to go. But if neither of those two leave, which is what ideally they would like, there's going to have to be some movement elsewhere. And Newcastle don't have massive, massive saleable assets in terms of revenue you could bring in. They do have some players who could generate some money, but not anywhere close to sort of like £50 million players or anything like that for one individual beyond probably the two that I've mentioned there, at least who you would countenance selling. And now Joe Linton has been signed on to a new contract, so he is not going to be sold this summer, which would have been the case if he'd gone to the final 12 months. But he has also taken up a slightly bigger proportion of the wage budget, so Newcastle can't spend that necessarily going forward. So again, sorry, this is still very complicated. What was already going to be a difficult summer in terms of complicated for what Newcastle had to do, you mentioned the Lascelles and Botman injuries. Now, Newcastle, certainly for the first third of next season, probably at least for the first half of next season, Newcastle are going to be without Sven Botman and Jamal Lascelles. Now, Jamal Lascelles had triggered a one-year extension in his contract, and he maybe could have been someone who could have potentially been sold to bring in some of that money this summer, but that isn't going to happen now. And instead, what you've got is you've got Botman and Lascelles as wages to be paying for the first half of next season, but you don't have two centre-backs there. So Newcastle are light in defensive position. So they are looking to sign defenders. Obviously, heavy linked with Lloyd Kelly, who Eddie Howe signed at Bournemouth, and also Tosin at Fulham, another free agent. Now, both of them are being looked at. That doesn't mean both of them will sign, or necessarily either of them will sign, but there is a sort of... they're both attractive propositions because of the business Newcastle have to do elsewhere. So a free transfer is never a quote-unquote free transfer in terms of there are always agents and like to
include. Every penny counts at the moment.
Exactly. But in terms of a cheaper level, not having to pay any sort of transfer fee, they become more attractive propositions. And so I think Newcastle probably will try and move for at least one of those two. And so it looks like Newcastle need at least one defender, probably two, maybe someone like Lloyd Kelly, who can play both as left-back and a centre-back. That versatility is what Newcastle are going to be looking for, particularly with the injury situation I mentioned with those two. So more focus has gone into defence than was necessarily planned. I think Newcastle were looking for a defender anyway, but now that has very much become a priority position. Another priority position is an attacker of some form, whether that's an out-and-out striker, probably more likely to be someone a bit more versatile who can play across the sort of front three. That's a position Newcastle desperately needs to lessen some of the load on Alexander Isak. And because when you look at the Callum Wilson situation, when he plays, he scores goals, but he's not fit often enough for what Newcastle needs. He's not durable enough to be able to aid someone like Alexander Isak. And he's only going to have a year left on his contract. For him, maybe one sort of final big move if he can get it. This feels like a sort of, to me, it feels like it may be a natural sort of parting of ways this summer. It suits everyone if that's the sort of situation. So there's potentially someone you can bring in. Now, Wilson's injury situation means that maybe not quite as much as he intended, but I still think given his goal-scoring record, he can probably generate somewhere between £10 and £20 million from him, which will aid Newcastle PSR-wise and will also allow them to invest. Because, again, to get more complicated, when I was saying about transfer fees that you spend or amortize, so spread over the cost of a contract, it's different when you sell someone. You can that summer.
It's all in.
It's all in. Now, for Callum Wilson, there is another complicating factor that whatever their sort of amortized fee on the Newcastle contract is gets taken off of the value you'd actually gain from it. But Callum Wilson's basically nearly off the books in terms of what his value is. So Newcastle will get nearly all of the value they could then just put back into to reinvest in this summer. So Callum Wilson, I think, is a decent chance he will go. You then look at academy products. Now, the way that they're described is it's called pure profit. And basically, if you sell someone you've brought up through the academy because you haven't spent any money on them in the past, they basically all of the whatever you sell them for, if you sell someone for £30 million, you get a full £30 million in terms of to be able to put in as a profit that you've made on that situation. Now, Newcastle don't want to sell Lewis Miley. They don't want to sell Elliot Anderson. And ideally, they wouldn't want to sell Sean Longstaff either. But Sean Longstaff's going into the final year of his deal. They have quite a lot of midfielders now, that particularly if Bruno Guimaraes is staying. Obviously, Sandro Tonali is hopefully going to come back from his ban at the end of August if that doesn't get extended with the FA. And so there are a couple of players who you look at alongside Miguel Almirón, who was the one who they decided in January, not that they wanted him to go, but if they had to sell someone to generate money to bring in, Almirón
was the lamb.
He was essentially the lamb. He was the one who sort of fit the categories of, we ideally wouldn't sell him, but who can we live potentially without and who can we actually get a decent fee for? It was Miguel Almirón in January. I still think there's a decent chance of that this summer as well. But all that will also partly be determined by who Newcastle think they can bring in. If they think they can bring in a right winger, the likelihood of Miguel Almirón going increases. If they don't, then can they afford to let Miguel Almirón go? So, sorry, that was a very long-winded and complicated answer.
No, it's a complicated situation.
Yeah, it is.
Yes. So, I just want to back up a little bit on Sandro Tonali. Has there been any movement on his sort of FA investigation and how that might look in terms of his suspension?
So we're still waiting to hear from the hearing. So he has responded to the charges, but we are waiting to hear where that goes. So there's 50 fresh FA charges which were during his time in England. So before he was actually involved in the investigation in Italy. So I think it was up until about October the 16th, around that sort of time. But no, we're still waiting to hear from that. Now, at least some within the club are hopeful and believe they've had indications that any ban would run concurrently to his previous, because it's his current ban, and therefore, and it would also potentially be backdated, so therefore he wouldn't be out for any longer than, I think it's August the 27th, he's due back. But equally, there is no guarantee, because the final panel hearing will be an independent panel who make that decision. So that hasn't been confirmed yet. We haven't heard what the decision is, so still a bit on tenterhooks there about Sandro Tonali.
Yeah, so there's no time frame.
Hopefully in the not too distant future. Newcastle certainly would like it sorted soon enough, but I haven't got a specific date as to when that's meant to come out.
Ah, okay. Director of football now, Dan Ashworth, still tending his garden, and he probably have some of the most greenest bushes in your fine country, Chris. Is there any movement on that from the Manchester United side? And then on the other side, are Newcastle any further advanced in signing his replacement?
Well, negotiations, and I use that sort of term in inverted commas, are still ongoing between Newcastle and Manchester United about the Dan Ashworth situation. I mean, there was a bit of, I think, frustration on all sides as to how that played out. Certainly Newcastle, I don't think, were happy how it played out behind the scenes, in terms of it seemed to be a very public approach before there was actually an approach of any necessary sorts. Now, no agreement is yet being reached, although Amanda Staveley did meet with Sir Jim Ratcliffe, who runs INEOS, who have put the the weird situation have at Man United, where he is now the minority investor, but has sort of say over the footballing side of things. So he's trying to restructure Manchester United's footballing operations and wants Dan Ashworth to be the sporting director there. So he remains on garden leave. He's still technically an employee of Newcastle United and is being paid by them. And that sort of complicates matters to a certain degree as to who Newcastle can bring in, because that situation sort of needs to be parked. But at the same time, Newcastle have brought in an external recruitment firm who have been conducting, they've reached out to candidates across Europe, or well, I think in the wider footballing world as well, to find out of potential interest, conducted some interviews in terms of at that stage, but now it's at the stage where Newcastle are basically finalising a shortlist, for want of a better term, and then it will go to sort of, there'll be an internal process where these candidates will be interviewed, potentially even by Yasser Aramayan, the chairman, obviously governor of PIF, and then a decision will be made as to who is brought in. So I think that the hope it's going to be sorted in the next month or so, but it isn't as of yet at the final stage of someone has been appointed. And so but they are at the closing stages of what has been a fairly extensive process, just as it was to bring in Dan Ashworth in the first place. That process took about, I think, 3 months all in all before Newcastle then approached Brighton and said he's definitely the man we wanted. And then obviously he had a period of garden leave before Newcastle paid up his contract there as well. So if Newcastle bring someone in who is at another club, there may be a period of garden leave or compensation needs to be paid to break them from that. And ideally, I think they would like someone in sooner rather than later. And so I think they will try not to make maybe the same mistakes that you may perceive Man United have made, because they need to go in the front door and make sure that they say, we would like your sporting director. This is the situation. Is there a compensation for you? Rather than maybe how it's played out elsewhere with the Manchester United situation. So again, a long way of saying, as of yet, nobody specifically in the frame, but Newcastle have interviewed a lot of people from across Europe and the wider footballing world. And they are now down to a shorter list who are going to then come to internal discussions in terms of among the board and other people within the football club to see who they think is the ideal successor for Dan Ashworth.
Yeah, oh, nice. Demi, have you got anything, mate?
Got a couple of things. Just back on the squad, Chris, what do you think the chances? Obviously, your colleague Jacob did a great piece about Minta and sort of his time at Feyenoord, and we had a podcast recently with a guy from a Feyenoord podcast, and he was glowing about Yankuba. He sort of reminded me, or the way he was talking about him was sort of reminded me a bit of like ASM in terms of flashy. You see his really good stuff, but maybe he's a little bit less refined than he needs to be. Do you think Newcastle would consider selling him on without even playing a game for Newcastle? Because obviously Newcastle only bought him for, I think, around about £10 million from memory. So if someone was willing to double our money, Feyenoord, for example, or another club in Europe, do you think Newcastle would consider on selling Minta without him even playing for the club?
I think that will come into the consideration. Now, our understanding is that there basically are three options as things stand, and all of it will basically come out of, he's going to come back and be involved in pre-season. Eddie Howe wants to take a look at him in pre-season. And as things stand, I think the most likely outcome is that he probably will go out on loan again next season, whether that's to Feyenoord again or whether Newcastle decide he needs experience elsewhere to learn a different league, a different style of play, maybe not being quite as dominant a team and see how he performs, something along those lines. But the other two options are, if Newcastle don't sign a right winger, for example, if they do have to sell him Miguel Almiron, if Minta really does actually make an impact in pre-season, and for example, if Newcastle, particularly if they're in the Conference League, Europa Conference League rather than the Europa League, could Yankuba Minta realistically play quite often in that league? Could he be someone who maybe by the end of the season then could be pushing towards being in terms of Premier League contention as well? He could form part of the squad, and as a youngster, that's someone who wouldn't necessarily need to be named in the Premier League squad, and so could be an extra body beyond the 25-man senior Premier League squad. So that is a possibility. But the third option is to aid with PSR if they do get a really enticing offer, and Eddie Howe looks at him and thinks, yeah, he's good, but he's not quite ready for us, so I don't see he necessarily fits into my style, because he was more of a Dan Ashworth signing or more of a sort of recruitment team signing than he was an Eddie Howe first team signing. He was someone for the future. There is the chance that Newcastle could look at it and think, this will really aid our PSR situation. we think if we hold on to him for another year or two, that we're not going to get that much more than we are now. He's sort of at the height of his value, or certainly at a decent value, then they would consider it. So no final decision has been made there, but it isn't beyond the realms of possibility that, yeah, Jan-Kuba Minna never actually plays a game for Newcastle United.
Because I know what they do on the continent when there's a young player who sort of breaks through like that. What they usually do is put a buyback clause. I'm not sure if Newcastle would do something similar, but in the case of Minter, they could do something along the lines of maybe double our money, but put a buyback clause for a similar amount if it turned out that we did want him in maybe 2 years' time when he was ready for Premier League football. I'm just thinking when we're going through before the sort of the complication with the depreciation and the amortization and sort of what Newcastle are going to do. I think they're going to have to be creative. And I think you're right, Chris, in terms of the academy players, they're probably not the easiest ones to sell, but probably the most lucrative ones to sell. And it's probably going to be a process of elimination in terms of who to sell. And if Tonali's ban isn't extended and Bruno comes back and we've probably got a lot of depth in central midfield, it may have to be one of the young Geordie boys who do get sold on. And I mean, it's obviously not ideal for fans to see local players sold and prosper elsewhere, but at this stage, it's probably going to be what we have to do. But in terms of the general sort of outlook from the club, how do you think they're assessed this season? I mean, it's been, like you said, riddled with injuries. Do you think there's been understanding in terms of the inconsistent nature of it? And do you think the club overall are generally happy with what we've performed in terms of the Premier League? How do you think they've assessed the season?
Yeah, I think if Newcastle would have finished where they are now in sixth place and have got to two cup quarterfinals, one of them really should have been a semi-final, but for a lapse from Kieran Trippier in the very last minute against Chelsea, and being minutes away from potentially progressing in the Champions League, never mind having got into the Europa League and dropped down to the Europa League knockout stages, I think that it will be assessed as a testing but also positive season. Newcastle really started the season, the first few weeks of the season were difficult beyond beating Aston Villa, but they then went in a very good period basically from September through until the start of December. And then it was basically the middle third, not even middle third, middle sort of a quarter of the season where things fell apart, really, certainly in the Premier League, and that was just everything came to a head. It was the perfect storm of things going against them, and the team, it wasn't just the fact that results were going against them. There were an alarming number of goals being conceded. The team sort of lost its very identity, and it didn't look like an anyhow team. It didn't represent what it had previously, and that was due to a combination of injuries, suspensions, various factors. But at that point, I think that it was hard to look beyond that situation, that very period of time. And it looked a very difficult and challenging situation. You couldn't see Newcastle getting out of it. But what gradually they have built up and they've gathered some momentum. And as anyhow teams tend to do, they are finishing the season strongly, touch wood, they continue to do so, building momentum. They're very much a momentum-based side under anyhow, and they tend to go on a roll when they do. And I think in that situation, they did back how. There was external disquiet, but there's never really any internal pressure in terms of your job is really, really under threat. You could really go here in terms of Eddie Howe potentially getting sacked. And that, I think he felt that backing, and he felt that over time things would improve and that his methods would pay dividends. So I think that it'll be seen as a learning campaign as well. And lessons do have to be learned. And I include Eddie Howe in this for as wonderful a job as I think he has done in terms of turning this around and really the season as a whole. He would say himself, I'm sure, that he has to learn more how are we going to manage European football going forward? How do we deal with the sort of injury situation going forward, regardless of the fact there was freak injuries, that things have to be learned and lessons have to be basically put into practice going forward. And I'm sure they will be. There's nobody who is more self-critical than Howe and will try and develop and push going forward. But the club really hadn't quite caught up with the form of the team of last season. The Newcastle became a Champions League side, but I don't know if they're a Champions League club yet, and they still aren't. That's still a work in progress. And again, every single level of the club has to grow with them. So I think that this will be seen as a difficult season in many ways, but also successful. Certainly if it's top six, top seven, there's European football. And it's about making sure that going forward, Newcastle are stronger for it, and that these challenges they can deal with more by having a deeper squad going forward, by having understanding of how to rotate and how to manage the sort of increased workload, the increased commercial responsibilities, the increased travel that you get from being in Europe. All of these things were new to Eddie Howe and most of the squad, and I do think they will be better for it going forward. That's the way that they're going to look at it as things stand, I believe.
All right, terrific. All right, before I wrap this up, Chris, it'd be remiss of me not to ask you, what have you got coming up work-wise? What pieces are you working on for The Athletic that we need to keep a lookout for?
Well, in just a couple of hours' time, I'm going to be doing my what is now a weekly live Q&A with subscribers, which is called Inside Newcastle, where you can ask me questions for an hour on a Monday afternoon, as it is UK time, and I sort of go through what's going on at Newcastle and what I'm sort of hearing about different situations. And then we hopefully, in the not-too-distant future, will have a bit of an update on the sporting director search as to what exactly is going on. That's something else we're looking at. And also, in the next few weeks, I'm hoping to do something on Gateshead. I don't know if it's filtered across to
but
Mike Williamson, the former Newcastle centre-back, was the manager there. It is now Rob Elliott, who's an interim charge, a former Newcastle goalkeeper, who is also their technical director. And they've done really defied the odds in the fifth tier of English football, as it is the National League, and have managed to get to the top six. So they should, in theory, be in the playoffs to try and get back into the Football League. But as things stand, as I sit here on Monday afternoon UK time, that they're not going to be allowed to take part in the playoffs because they don't meet the criteria in terms of off-field criteria, which just seems like a travesty that it's all about an administrative side that may prevent them from being able to achieve something on the field and go up. And so I'm going to do a bit of a piece around that because they have got to the FA Trophy final, which is sort of a non-league knockout competition, which is going to be at Wembley next month. And hopefully the time with that, I'm going to do something around Gateshead and the situation there, because it would be of Newcastle's benefit and also Sunderland's benefit, to be fair, all North East teams, if they had a thriving Gateshead in the Football League. And it looks like they're going to be prevented from having the opportunity to do that, which is really, really frustrating.
Yes, we did say that. We did mention in our group chat, maybe our Saudi owners could possibly buy the stadium and use that as their 10-year license. And maybe... That'll solve the problem. So, yeah, watch this space. Chris, we can't thank you enough for your time tonight. For those of you who are still with us, after you finish this, make sure you go and give Pond on a time to listen. I'm a weekly listener as well. So, and follow Chris on Twitter for all updates and Newcastle United related. So thanks very much for your time, mate.
No problem. Anytime, guys. Thank you.
Jimmy, thank you. And yeah, hopefully you can speak to your bosses at The Athletic and we might catch up with you in Melbourne in about a month's time.
I'd like to see. So now, I mean, it is great to hear how passionate and you guys are about seeing it, because we get caught up in this bubble, I suppose, here of the negative sort of side of it. But then actually hear from supporters in different parts of the world when Newcastle or other clubs do go out to these areas, and then you realise that actually, yes, it does mean a heck of a lot to them. And so it's important, I think, for us within the bubble to reach out and actually realize what it can mean to you. So guys,
absolutely. So if you ever want to talk to us about the tour and everything, mate, you've got our details, so we'll happily help you out with that. And we might, if you can't come, maybe we can be your Aussie correspondents for the tour.
I'd like that
over here as well. So we're here if you need us, mate. But we'll wrap it up now. Thanks for your time, Chris. Thanks, Dimmy, and stay tuned for the next episode of the United series. Thank you.
Cheers, mate.